The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by HubSpot. Imagine growing a business with high-quality leads, fast-closing deals, and wildly happy customers. It's not a miracle. It's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.
LinkedIn presents.
Welcome to Brown Table Talk. I am DC Marshall, founder and CEO of Diverse and Engage, a DEI thought leader, a LinkedIn top voice, and I'm here with my co-host, Mita. Hey there, Mita.
Hey there, Dee. I'm Mita Malik, a Wall Street Journal and USA Today bestselling author, a business leader, a LinkedIn top voice, and most importantly, a mom.
And Mita and I started Brown Table Talk as a place to spill the tea on the hard truths women of color face in their workplaces from my perspective as a Black woman and for Mita, her view as a South Asian woman. At our table, we unpack it all. We don't leave any juicy details out. And then we provide you with tips you need, not on how to survive, but how do you thrive in organizations wherever you are. So Mita, what are we talking about on today's show?
Dee, we are talking about the following topic. Are you a lazy girl? Are you a lazy girl? I can't wait to talk to you about this. You know, I love these terms. Let's spill some tea. Let's share some stories. Let's discuss this and let's get into this topic. Have you heard of this term, Dee? The lazy girl job?
What? No.
It's real. It's real. You know what I love? I love bringing these new workplace terms to our table and then DC Marshall dissects it and stomps on it. But here we go. Let me tell you. So it has been trending all year, Dee. Massively on TikTok. It's getting a lot of press. A lazy girl job doesn't actually mean that a worker is lazy. It's just that the job should be paying your bills, and you have so much work-life balance that you just should feel as almost you're operating at a lazy state. And I have to say, it's your favorite Gen Z coming into the workforce saying that I'm just not in it. I'm not going to do this like corporate hustle culture anymore. I'm just not. And so it's really interesting because on one hand, I'm like, who's come up with this term? I think like DC Marshall, is it a conspiracy? Is it corporate America? Or is it really Generation Z saying, no, I'm coming in the workplace. I'm not waiting to find work-life balance. I'm starting day one and I'm grabbing onto it. I'm grabbing onto it. What do you think? Well, first of all, have you heard of the term?
So I have. I didn't know it was picking up steam. In fact, I've heard of the lazy girl job. And I also saw a report recently about Gen Z says they need a minimum of $500,000 annually in salary. So I think this is interesting. You know that, yes, I am the person who is always questioning when there's new frame, new language, or a new lens, or a new label, where did it originate from? Because if it comes from inside of corporate walls, I just have a different lens, versus I'm much more open and receptive when Gen Z outside of corporate walls do their own thing. They are disrupting things. So I have mad respect for Gen Zs and millennials who, you know, to some extent, right? But just because they push and they're redefining, right? Now, I may not agree with it all, but I really respect people who are redefining and pushing back on things that for us, we just had to be much more respectful and much more go along. We were the go along culture. Baby, you have to be respectful and not disrupting. So let's go back to the lazy girl. You know, I see some of the titles, right? They're non-technical. They're like mid-level individual contributor. I see titles like customer service manager and such and all. I mean, I don't know that there is anything wrong with this piece of lazy girl job that says that I am not going to kill myself for this company or for the job. I do believe in giving your best and showing up as your best. No, Gen Z, show up and give your best. But I do agree with them that what we're not going to do is I'm not going to kill myself. I'm not answering these emails at 11 o'clock at night. No, ma'am. No, sir.
So let's talk about that.
So Gen Z, round of applause for Gen Z. Gen Z.
One of the things we've talked about, and I liked how you just talked about the terms, because I think one of the things we've both reacted to is when terms are weaponized against us. And this term seems to be like Gen Z saying, no, you're going to call me lazy. No, before you get a chance to call me lazy, I'm going to tell you, yeah, this is the lazy girl job, because this is about reclaiming my life. Not reclaiming. From the start, I'm going to own it. Because some of us later in our career have tried to reclaim it. So I don't believe there's like a weaponization of the term going on here, at least as far as I can see. But here's what I find interesting. Let's talk to the people leaders who are listening in. Thanks for joining us. It's like, Dee, I was raised in a corporate culture where I gave 12 hours. I went above and beyond. I responded to notes at 7 a.m. on Sunday and at midnight on a Friday. You know all those stories. And here's a generation entering the workforce saying, no, no, and no. And what are you going to do? Fire me? Because I'm doing the basics. I'm doing the basics. I'm doing my job. I'm meeting my metrics, but I have dinner plans tonight. So no, Dee, I'm not canceling it to go work on that memo. Bye. You're like, what? No, but the memo is due tomorrow. Oh, I have dinner plans.
I love it. I'm here for it. But I like you. So long before Diverse and Engage, same thing. I think if our traditional working hours were 9 to 5, this was in financial services in Princeton, so central New Jersey, in a cushy corporate campus, I would get there at 7:30. Like it was, and it was a proud moment to get there at 7:30 and 8.
Yeah, I remember those moments. Yeah, you're there with your Starbucks. You're like, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And not leave ever. If the end of the day was 5, no, you would definitely not leave at 5. You would leave at 5:25 because you were not only, you were managing perception and you were also assimilating to culture, and corporate culture was do not be the person that's leaving out at 5, or at least we now know for us, we didn't have that luxury, right? We did not have the luxury of leaving at 5. So you're right. We come from a different culture, but lazy girl, I love that, or the lazy girl job concept. I love the art of owning your career and redefining how you will work. I like that you called out the way that we now can sort of process the label is it being used to weaponize? Like what language is, weaponization of language and frames, and that's not what this is. So I like that part.
Okay, so because this is the Brown Table Talk, we are here for everyone, but particularly we are in service of women of color. So let me ask you this question that is on my mind. Does this work for women of color? Does this work for women of color, or does this work for white women? That's the thing I wanted to tease out. And I'm going to say that because this is a table where we talk about the hard truths women of color face in the workplace. So I can't not say that out loud, because there's Gen Z, of course, there's Generation Z, and then there's intersectionality. So what say you, Dee?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. So the lazy girl kinds of jobs, or the jobs that are categorized as lazy girl, as a Black woman, I could have that job, but even in that job, I still have to pay. I'm still responsible for the Black tax. And right, you have to do
Wait, stop right there. Stop right there. Allies, lean in. DC Marshall, please explain that term, Black tax.
Well, you know what? I'm using it in a way. There's a known concept that came out of a Catalyst research study that talked about the emotional tax that not just Black people, but people of color pay in businesses and in corporate spaces where the environment may not be inclusive, right? So that is the one way that this language or the frame is used, that Black tax or the emotional tax it's referred to. But I'm using it in the way that the Black tax is that I have to do more, right? There is an unspoken expectation and standard and bar and benchmark that I could not be in a customer service or a lazy girl job and do the least. To get there and to remain in that role, I have to do the most. I would not be able to come in late or on time. If I'm on time, I'm late, as my mentor, Dr. Barbara Skinner Williams, would say, if you're on time, you're late. So if they start at 9, I can't walk in at 9. I can't be getting coffee.
Don't walk in at 9 with your Starbucks, Steve. Nope. nope, it better be 8:30, 8:40.
So you're right. So I love that you teased it out, because you're right. That's what we owe our listeners. And actually, we also owe our allies, because that's what they're here for. They're like, well, tell me what I don't know. Okay. So you're right. We don't have the luxury. And so it still applies. So I think, Mita, this is a good point, because I think it impacts us culturally. That's not our behavior, right? We have always had to show up and over deliver. And then even today, right? So it's not even just historically. It's like even today, try that. Try it and see how long it works for you to fall asleep at your job as you come in at 9:02, come in at 9:05 and leave at 4:50 or out of office and make yourself not available. Like, oh no, I can't do that because that's not in my job description. That right there, as a Black woman, I don't have the luxury. And Black women listening know they don't have the luxury.
No. We don't have the privilege to be average. We don't. I don't have the privilege to conduct myself in a lazy girl fashion and have a lazy girl job. There is no job for me that could be a lazy girl job. What job? Marketing associate, customer service rep. You can go on and list all of them and Google them. I just don't know. Because you know what's going to happen? Exactly what you said. I'm going to start to be labeled a poor performer. I'm going to start to be labeled as not as ambitious, demotivated, disengaged. She's toxic. I mean, that's just my perspective. I'd love to hear from white women on our white women network if they also feel they would be penalized for being a lazy girl. I don't know, at work. And owning it so proudly. That's what I find fascinating about this TikTok trend. Like, people are like, yes, I am owning this. And I'm proud of it, that I am just really, I don't know, I never did a time card stamp, but you know, clocking it in and out.
Yeah. This is such a drastic differences between generations.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. In the last 100 years, we've seen financial markets swing, new currencies come and go, decades of savings lost in days, all showing that a retirement plan without a guarantee, quite simply, isn't enough. So more than a retirement plan, TIAA makes you a retirement promise. A promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life. A promise that pays off. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff.
Hi, I'm Tomer Korn, LinkedIn's Chief Product Officer. On my podcast, Building One, we dive deep into what it takes to build great products. Recently, we had Zach Perret, the CEO of Plaid, and he shared about his struggles building a financial app for consumers and how he was able to turn it all around with a critical pivot. Take a listen.
I personally couldn't resonate as much with the consumer set that we were trying to reach. I just didn't have that level of empathy. When we made the shift to building a B2B product, though, I was building the product that I wanted. My co-founder and I were creating the product that we wanted ourselves, and we had so much empathy for what that product was.
Such a great insight.
You know, in that sense, we got lucky because we were creating a thing for ourselves. And then the people that we were talking to also had the same problems we did. They were fintech developers. We'd been a fintech developer. We'd been trying to build a fintech product for a year. And so we had such deep empathy. We had such a clear ability to...
If you want to hear more of Zach Perret's story and the lessons that follow, listen and subscribe to my podcast, Building One.
It's interesting to watch that millennials and Gen Z are different from everything before. And it's a continuation of a trend of more bold, more disruptive. Although, let me say this respectfully. I think because they're the product of Gen X, right? They're the product of every generation is progressive in nature, or at least should be more. Every generation should surpass. Like, your kids are going to, definitely your daughter, Priya, she's already like, is going to far, you know, exceed whatever it is you've done, and definitely your son. But even in her thinking, like, I feel like I even remember her interviewing you. She was your first interviewer for your book.
From the book. And yeah. She grabbed my book and said, Mom, sit down. I'm going to interview you. I said, huh?
So it is the spirit and posture and nature of Gen Z, millennials. They are product of the success and the good that have come out of the previous generation. That's what I think. I think we've taught culture, people, kids, to think differently, to be independent thinkers, to be critical thinkers. And so now we're seeing how they're defining everything and disrupting everything. And I'm going to say most of it good. I really am of the opinion of holding up every generation and all people. Now, look, I don't agree with everything, But, and we should expect that. We should expect that, oh, listen, she gets it honest. Your daughter gets it honest. She gets it honest. Like sit down. I'm going to interview you. I'm running this. Like what you're not
I'm running this. I'm running the show. But you know what I think is interesting? The dynamics of Generation Z, which statistically we know is much more inclusive than generations that have come before, and very strong diversity of representation. We know in the US right now, over 40% of individuals identify as non-white, and that number is growing rapidly. And thank you to our global audience who's also listening in. But Generation Z is being managed by other generations who likely have biases. And it comes back to, out of Generation Z, who has the privilege to show up to work that way? Whose behavior will be tolerated? Right? Very interested. Tolerated, right? Because I do think some people leaders who are listening are like, I'm tired of this generation. I'm tired of them coming in. They haven't even earned it, D. And they're coming in and telling us what they can and can't or won't do. But again, I think there's a certain level of privilege in there. It's not for everybody.
Yeah, I think that's one of the important or the most important nuggets to come out of this show. And then the second is it's for the generation that is currently managing Gen Z and millennials, but only for a moment. The second sort of, I think, nugget here to come out of this conversation is, what do you do if you're the people leader and you're managing, you're like this, I'm going to say, The burden of proof, you know, when you have to prove your case, the burden of proof is on the plaintiff. I believe the burden of compromise and flexibility and learning a new and better way, it lies on the current people leaders. So if you're listening here of the previous generation, let me tell you, and myself included, this is me included. I'm telling you, listen, I have wonderful people who work here at the company at Diverse and Engage. But I learn and they are different. And sometimes I'm shocked. I'm like, okay. You know, beyond the fact that they'll say, I'll get the message, I'll get a DM in our Slack. D, are you ghosting? Are you ghosting me? I got to learn the language and then I got to learn behavior. But let me come back. Right. But my point is, I'm talking about those of us who are not of that generation, or of course, Gen Z or the future generation. We have the burden of responsibility to learn a different way. Why? Because we have less active years than they have. And because they are majority, for those of us who are based in the US, I know we have a global audience, but if you are based in the US, to me, to your point, the largest domestic emerging market is people of color, right? And so I'm bridging all of these pieces together, because also millennials, Gen Z together combined, and even millennials separately, is the largest generation in the US. They surpass boomers by, I think, millennials, maybe somewhere around 73 million, last I checked, don't quote me on the numbers, and then boomer 70. And so I'm putting all of these elements together to say, to your point, Mita, for the people leaders here, we have the burden of responsibility, or we have, what's a better word than burden? Help me out, friend.
It's a privilege to lead, full stop.
We have the privilege to lead.
It's a privilege to privilege for you to figure this out. You have the title.
You have the responsibility.
Responsibility and title and the privilege. Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
And to some extent, what I'm saying is to meet them where they are, to some extent. So you can't be all stop. So
it can't be extremes on either end to meet people in the middle. What I will say is, I think what's fascinating is this is really challenging the construct and expectations of work and how we work. I think that there's this, let me tell you, Dee, it's like, you get the VP title, oh, you get to work less. People think that. So then you get the VP title, you squeeze the work on your team, and this generation is saying, no. You get paid more and you get the title, you should do more work. And I follow Gary Vaynerchuk. I was his client years ago. I respect a lot of what he says in the business world. And he says, you know, he's founded many companies, and he says, I can't expect my team to work harder than me. This is my company. I own it. I should be the one working the hardest. And it's similar, I think, in corporate America, where some leaders, you get this title and then you want to coast and think, well, everyone else is going to do the work because now I've gotten this title. And no, game over.
And I also think the leaders who engage in that kind of behavior, unfortunately, they're probably managers and not leaders, right? Because leaders would understand there's a different way and a better way. And that's just not the way of a leader. That's probably the way of a manager. So yeah, I think this is all very interesting.
Ooh. Yeah. Dee, before we head to tips, I have to say one more thing. Oh my God. Never, never will I walk into a meeting that starts at 9 a.m. with the Starbucks. I won't do it. I won't do it. Forget 9:05. Forget 9:05. I'll dump that Starbucks and walk in. But it's a bad look. You know, 9 a.m., the meeting starts, and here comes Meet ND with their Starbucks. Oh, you waited in line to get the Starbucks or your mobile app, but you couldn't come early in. Showing up right on time.
You just helped somebody. Somebody listening, they did not know that is a fail. And I'm going to tell you what they're saying. Oh, but I had this, or my husband, or my wife, or my... No, it doesn't even matter. However you got that coffee, the perception, or that cup, the perception is... It's always going to be, that's a fail. That is a hashtag fail.
I literally was walking into a meeting recently. I had a meeting at 2:00. And I thought to myself, because I really wanted a Starbucks after lunch. I was like, oh, doing the math. I was like, I could do this. I could stand in line. I was like, no. Because what's going to happen is you're going to cut close. You're going to walk in with that hot chai latte with extra whipped cream. And they're all going to look at you. You walk in at 2:01. It's hot and ready. No, I do that calculation all the time. I hope that helps somebody.
By the way, we're not going to say Starbucks is canceled because, you know, listen, we will get this Starbucks if Starbucks wants to partner with us, Mita. So what we're not going to do, there is no shade on Starbucks, but we will. That would be a good partnership, perhaps.
Give us a call, Starbucks. We love you. I spend way too much money at Starbucks. I know you do too. So. We can do a commercial for our Starbucks drinks. Just call us.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Oh, I love that. We got to go to tips. All right, everybody. We're going to go to tips.
Okay, Dee, now I need a Starbucks, but we'll hold on that for a second so we can wrap up this conversation and go to tips. I'm going to go to DU for tip 1 and 2, friend.
All right. And so tip number 1 is always listen and learn. So I think that's the approach to any new term, understanding that not all terms are weaponized or used for a purpose that may not be to our best interest. So that would be tip number 1. And then tip number 2, not all terms are us. Not all terms are for us. And so always be mindful that terms are not universal. So while you want to respect perhaps the origination and how some may use it, not all terms are universal. All right. And Mita, over to you for tip number 3.
I have to go after that fire. That was awesome. Woo! Okay. I'm not embracing lazy girl, but tip number 3, people, leaders, friends, world of work is changing quickly. Expectations are changing. And so just be connected to your teams and expectations on how people like to work and what impact they want to make. I think that's so important, and more to come on this topic. Thank you for being here, Dee. We are at the end of our episode. Thank you to the Brown Table Talk community. If you enjoyed this conversation, please share it with someone who needs to hear it today. Please review, please subscribe, and we will see you next time.
Side effects of listening to Brown Table Talk may include allies unleashed, getting paid more, and a dose of badassery all the way around. More at www.browntabletalkpodcast.com.